music and talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Welcome to Intravenous on CJSF 90.1 FM, campus community radio from Burnaby Mountain, where we broadcast on the unceded ancestral territories of the Kwikwetlem, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh peoples. My name's Robin, and I will be the host for today's program. We'll be hearing an interview that I did with the team from Period Promise last week on Zoom. But first, let's hear this song from Janelle Monáe. This is Pink.
Thank you.
I have Chairperson Melissa Chirino, researcher Ariel Reed, and Neil Adolf, United Way's Director for Period Promise. Hello and welcome.
Hello.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
I want to start by finding out exactly what Period Promise is all about.
I'll maybe quickly jump in, and Arielle and Melissa, feel free to, of course. So the Period Promise campaign that United Way runs is all focused about increasing access to free menstrual products in our community so that more and more people can find them where they need them, when they need them, and know that there are reliable points of access in their community. So one of the things that United Way started to do about 5 years ago was we started these broad collection campaigns on collecting menstrual products and then distributing them out to our dozens upon dozens of community agency partners that are working on the front lines, providing direct support services to members of community who have been made vulnerable by a whole bunch of systems. One of those systems happens to be lack of access to menstrual products. And we started that largely because we were hearing from community organizations themselves that menstrual products were actually one of the most highly requested products at community organizations that they didn't have funding lines to actually purchase. So most community organizations were either using staff dollars to purchase product, like staff would go out on their break and buy a box of tampons and bring it back to the organization, or they would be making other kinds of donations or small donation drives, hoping that something would come in with a bundle of other pieces of food or other kinds of things that were being donated to the organization. So they were super dependent on small scale donations to solve this big scale problem. And the more and more we heard about it, the more and more we realized that United Way, you know, we've got a real position within community with donors and with community organizations, with government, with post-secondary institutions to really start to make a bit of a change on this with our partners and do it in a way that was embedded in our values of like building a more just, building a more equitable, building a more safe, diverse and inclusive community. And this is one way that we're committed to doing it. So since then we've kind of expanded the program. It started out just as a collection campaign. Now it's very much focused on that collection campaign, but also policy. Making sure that the systems that are causing the problem can change so the problem disappears. And that's really where we started working with exciting partners like BC Federation of Students. That's where Melissa and Arielle are working at. And they have started to take on this campaign, not only as an organization independently for themselves, but also with all of their member organizations around how to bring this particular movement from the policy perspective to post-secondary institutions in BC. And I'm gonna leave space there for them to talk about the work that they're doing on the Period Promise stuff, because that's exciting stuff. It's really fun.
I can jump in and just kind of like add to that about the student perspective. So periods, like people who menstruate get them like all the time. It can happen unexpectedly, and having those products available in bathrooms is so useful. You never know when you're gonna get your period, and like, for students like at school, like if you're getting it during a lecture and there's not like no period products available, it's very disruptive to like their learning. Some people have to walk out of their institution and go to like a supermarket to buy period products, and that can be very stressful because like on like the more direct way of seeing it, like people like have heavy periods. So it's very uncomfortable. So having those products available in public bathrooms and institutions is so helpful and can really help with learning and supporting students.
So as the BCFS's researcher, I have the kind of privilege to really dive into questions of accessibility. The BCFS exists to advocate for and lobby for quality post-secondary education that is affordable. And so we're concerned as an organization about the barriers to education, and period poverty is a barrier to education, so that people would pull themselves out of the educational setting, from engaging, from attending class, having to really jump through hoops and modify the way that they would live if they had access to menstrual products. You know, that to us is a barrier to education. When you throw on top of that the stigma, the taboo, the shame, the fear, you know, all of that kind of gets hyper complicated, and not having access to menstrual products stops being becomes a lot more complex. And as a problem, as a knot, it's more difficult to tease out the threads and to get to a solution.
Yeah, thanks, Ariel. You know, period poverty is a term that just recently I was introduced to through a conversation with the coordinator at the Women's Center here at SFU. And it makes a lot of sense to me, but I'm wondering if someone can sort of drill down for us, you know, how it's defined or what determines period poverty. How would you describe it?
I'll jump in first, but I'm also going to encourage anybody else to do so. I'm certainly going to leave some stuff out, because to be upfront, there's a lot of research and a lot of good work being done by people around the world in really trying to define what this issue really is. It's one of those kind of emerging parts of the social justice movement. And so it's still very much a definition that's being developed. One of the definitions that I really like, though, is it's lack of access to menstrual products as like a material thing, lack of access to good cleaning spaces to be able to clean yourself in the way that you want to be cleaned. And then the third one is lack of access to education around how to use products or what menstruation actually means. So all three of those combined kind of create the generalized framework of what period poverty actually is. What we tend to see in North America, in BC specifically, is maybe what I can speak about, is that period poverty, it features into those first two spaces more than it does the third space. There tends to be a little bit of public education around what menstruation actually is. People who menstruate at least oftentimes receive education in the public school system around what menstruation is. They don't always do it, and not everyone does. The way that we talk about menstruation is really odd for people in elementary school. We tend to separate out the people who are born with penises from the people who aren't born with penises into separate rooms, and one group gets to learn about what menstruation is and one group gets to not learn about what menstruation is. And the assumption is that if you present as a boy or if you present as a girl, that you are someone who menstruates, or are you someone who doesn't menstruate? That's clearly not true. We know that it's not only women who menstruate. We know it's not only girls who menstruate. Lots of trans folks, lots of binary folks, non-binary folks, menstruate as well. But so lack of education is an issue, but what we see locally is it's lack of access to the actual product itself, because it's expensive. It's incredibly expensive if you are reliant on support from government to pay your bills and all that sort of stuff. The amount that you receive from government in wage support is not enough. So you're making choices between buying food or buying tampons. And a lot of people will make the choice when the time comes to buy the food and navigate either staying at home or using unsafe alternatives instead. The other big piece, though, in a lot of really vulnerable communities, both in places like Vancouver's downtown east side, but also in remote communities in BC, is lack of access to good cleaning facilities. So if you are someone who is street dependent, you might not have access to a washroom where you have enough privacy to clean in the way that you would like to be cleaning yourself. And you might not necessarily feel as though the washroom that you do have access to is sanitary enough to be comfortable using. And that's a big issue. There's also the huge challenge in Indigenous communities around access to clean water. So even if you might have running water in your home, but it might not be good running water. And so you don't want to use it to clean yourself because it's got all sorts of bacteria and other toxins inside of it. So there are challenges that exist in BC that fit really well within that three-pronged definition of what period poverty actually means. And our primary work at United Way on the Period Promise side, in terms of the product side, is to build out localized solutions to the period poverty issue by increasing access to menstrual products, so that if you do have a space where you have good cleaning facilities and you do have knowledge about how to use product, you're able to at least access the physical product. But also working with partners like, again, the BCFS, to increase that collective knowledge so that we can, for communities, for individuals who might not know what menstruation is or how to use product or different varieties of product, different resources and tools are being developed to provide that education and provide that training. The generalized systems issue around lack of access to clean facilities, it's a big challenge, and it's something that requires government to really recognize the limited access to good, clean public washrooms in Vancouver and the Lower Mainland and across municipalities in the entire province, and then also from the federal government on their responsibility to provide Indigenous communities with good, clean running water.
I want to jump in and kind of just tease out something that that Neil brought up, that third definition of period poverty, which is lack of education on periods and on menstruation and product and how to use product. So Always Wash and Glocalities put out a one pager on some research they did about attitudes around menstruation globally. And more than 50% of the people surveyed, and included Canada, the US, Russia, China, and I think a couple other countries, expected that people would learn about menstruation and menstrual products at school or from their mothers. And so if the information isn't being provided in schools, and mothers are only transmitting the information that they have been handed down culturally, then there isn't actually much room for us to penetrate the culture around periods, discussions around menstruation. You know, it's in the realm of this very in the realm of this very private sphere that is difficult to penetrate. And what that means is that, you know, the tools that people have and the solutions that people find for period poverty are intensely personal. I'll share, you know, I had never heard of the term period poverty before coming to work at the BCFS. And my exposure to kind of lack of access to menstrual products was kind of in the developing world context, with young girls being kept from or not accessing school for lack of having product. But there's also a lack of lots of other stuff that happens in the developing world context. So coming, you know, being in a Canadian context, in an organization that is fighting for, you know, post-secondary education, which is, you know, important, but not a basic kind of human right, like food or water. It was hard for me initially to really, like, what is this thing that people are talking about? What is this thing that I'm reading about? And it took a minute for me to actually understand that my experience of not being able to provide menstrual products for myself and what I did to get to make do was actually the experience of this thing called period poverty. And so for me, the most important thing about this campaign is really people being able to step out of the intellectualized space of trying to understand the problem and really, really trying to put, to step into the shoes of somebody trying to provide themselves, trying to provide for themselves with all of these other barriers around it. So how do you ask for something that you need when you're embarrassed, when you're shamed, when it's taboo, and where you're really afraid of what's gonna happen if nobody recognizes and nobody is compassionate to the need that you have? And you know, thinking about it that way, it gives me chills. But you know, I've never experienced, you know, let me back up a second. So in putting that piece together, it really drove home to me what it is I'm looking at and why it's so important and so important to the BCFS and to its members. And the ways we need to begin talking about period poverty in order to get to a solution. Because if it stays in the dollars and cents and kind of like that administrative world, the actual impact to actual humans who are studying and humans who live in our community, all of that gets lost.
I totally agree with that. And I want to go from the lens of like education, because looking at my personal experience, like when I was younger in elementary school, like the whole talk about periods was such a weird concept to look at, because for the people that menstruate in the classroom, like we would pay attention because we're like, oh, what's this concept? Like, oh, this is something that we're gonna go through. And on the other side, like, the people who don't menstruate would be like just like giggling, and like it was just an awkward thing to talk about, and I never understood why, because it's a natural thing. Like it's very natural, and we should just have conversations about how this happens, and also look at like how can we support people who do menstruate, and because I think that that's like the very important thing to look at. I agree with Ariel about when we're talking about this, yes, the numbers and the stats are very important to look at, because that's how we bring this problem forward and like advocate for it. But I think it's very important to look at the personal stories, because I'm sure most people who menstruate like have stories and experiences that they have gone through. Like asking for a pad or tampon shouldn't be something that you're scared of asking for. It should be like it happens to like most of us, and like it should be a natural thing to go up to someone and be like, hi, I need a tampon. But it's such a weird thing for folks to even do. And I think talking about it more and educating ourselves is the first step to not having periods as a taboo, but just as a natural conversation. So I think the educational piece is a big part. And that's also how we get people to see the problem and for us to advocate for it. Because if people who don't menstruate understand why it's important to have free period products in public spaces, I think that's when all of us can come together and ask for that.
Yes, totally. And like being someone who doesn't menstruate, like absolutely, this is a very different conversation for me than it is for people who do menstruate, because I don't have that lived experience of what that interaction feels like. But stepping into this work, but kind of like from the outside, menstruation is like this secret club knowledge that people who menstruate get to hold, but particularly people who menstruate who present themselves as cisgendered women get to hold. And like, I think that there's something there that really limits, it strengthens the taboo, because it means that the only people who can publicly talk about menstruation are cisgendered women, and the only people who can present or talk about their need for access to product are cisgendered presenting women. And like that that is a real limitation on our ability to provide support and across the entire community and support flowing out of the entire community, right? Like it's we're really limiting ourselves as a collective when we only teach people who menstruate what menstruation actually is. But we also, one of the other impacts of that stigma is like, there's this secret network that exists among people who menstruate. Like if you don't have a tampon, you know who in your office might actually have an extra tampon. And if you're a student at a high school and you don't have the pad that you want, you know which teacher has that pad and is okay with providing it to you. And you found that out because you had a conversation with a colleague when you were in grade 9, and that sort of thing. Like that, there's this network of communication that keeps this. Unfortunately, it's a really smart workaround to the stigma and taboo that exists around it. But it keeps this from being recognized as like the collective systemic issue that it truly is. And totally agree with Ariel and Melissa. Like, we need to talk about this as people's personalized experiences that are affecting their dignity. That's really reducing their the way that we treat people as humans. But we also need to de-individualize that personal experience and recognize that like this is so common that it's something that's built into the system. And because it's built into the system, it can be broken and the system can get rebuilt in a different way. I was really surprised. So in March of this year, the United Way released a research report that we developed in partnership with the government of British Columbia. And there were lots of really fascinating stats that came out of that. And I don't want to toss a whole bunch of numbers out there because, as Ariel and Melissa very clearly and well said, like, this is about people and not about numbers. But we surveyed about 1,700 people across British Columbia on their experiences with limited access to menstrual products, and 51% of them indicated that at some point in their life they had struggled to purchase menstrual products for themselves. Like, this is a systemic issue. This isn't just the occasional pop-up, and it's affecting people very deeply and very personally.
I just want to chime in that, you know, as a woman in menopause, things have changed a lot since I was educated about menstruation and getting my period and products and availability to products, and all of those things have changed a lot. And so that, you know, looking back and in retrospect is really encouraging to me, because there's a whole lot more conversation around it than there ever was, based on my own experience. And I can talk about all of those three platforms from a very personalized experience. So I can really appreciate, you know, what period poverty means and how that has related to my own experience. You're listening to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM, Campus Community Radio. I want to take a song break, and fits in nicely with our conversation today around periods. So here we go.
Just got my period.
Oh, no way. Yeah.
Has anyone got a tampon? It's a big one.
We are nice girls, we have monthly bleeds. See these tampons, see these
bad things. Eligible bachelorette, just a modest house. That won't be reality till GSD is out. The vagina, half the people got them. Yet there's a tax if you're born with one of them. We can educate you, this can be biology. These are health items and that's a reality. Killer on the wallet, it's a killer for my pocket. You wanna tax our bodies, then yes, we're gonna mock it. So don't try telling us our tampons are non-essential. That's disrespectful. If you don't use them, you'll find it's detrimental. You should think about it for a second. Ain't no shame in the fact we're BLEED. So why we gotta pay this bloody GST?
When they're taxing our tampon, drop it cause it's raw. Drop it cause it's raw. Drop it cause it's raw. When you ride the cribs and wave, y'all. Bleeding non-stop. Bleeding non-stop. Bleeding non-stop. And if habit gives you attitude, GST is shot. GST is shot. GST is shot. I BLEED just cause I was born as me. So I pay the GST cause menstruation ain't for free. Chicks bleed, but y'all knew that. It ain't a luxury, we just gotta do that. I keep a tampon handy on the left side, pad on my right side, yeah, that's a chick style. Ain't it bizarre, they taxing tampons like tea, but even bushels is GST free. Stop taxing me, BLEED, FREED. It is agreed that my bleed should be freed. Menstruation items are justifiably a need. So girls and boys, all of y'all come inside. Mr. Joe Hockey is now on our side. Please don't be lax and get back to the facts. After 15 years, it's time to axe this tax. This law is just abysmal. Why can't we be judicial and have us a dismissal of this unfair taxism? When they're taxing our tampons, drop it cause it's raw. Drop it cause it's raw. Drop it cause it's raw. When you ride the crimson wave, yo, bleeding non-stop. Bleeding non-stop. Bleeding non-stop. And if Abbott gives you attitude, GST is shot. GST is shot. GST is shot. I gotta pay the GST cause I BLEED. Don't you ladies know menstruation ain't for free?
I'm joined on Zoom with the team for Period Promise, Melissa Chirino, Ariel Reed, and Neil Adolph. And I want to jump to you, Ariel, because you are the team's researcher. And I'm interested in knowing what you're learning, what is it revealed, and then what do you get to do with that information? How is it impacting your membership?
So as the researcher for the British Columbia Federation of Students, my job is really to look at the literature, the articles, any information out there, and distill it and turn it into a tool that our members can use to advocate for what they want. And so that could, you know, so in this case, it really is taking a scan of what's out there in terms of information, and packaging it so that our student unions, our member locals can use it to advocate for access to menstrual products on campus. So in 2019, the BCFS endorsed the Period Promise campaign unanimously. And really what they supported was the campaign to provide access to menstrual products in every public building. And they took on as a responsibility to push for and advocate for making sure that post-secondary institutions were including in that public building bit, and working with the administration to not only educate, but then, you know, sensitize, activate, agitate for menstrual products to be provided in the post-secondary education setting. And so what I've been able to learn, so I look at it kind of from the 50,000 foot view, and what I can tell you is that there isn't a lot out there about period poverty in Canada. And there's a lot of exciting research that is coming out. The report produced by the United Way is one of those bright, shining, kind of really important works, because there isn't a lot, and providing us an insight into what period poverty looks like in Canada, specifically what period poverty looks like in BC. And again, because menstruation is, and the ways we deal with it are a cultural product, the responses to it are also going to be cultural. So, you know, what's happening in Europe, what's happening in the United States is great to kind of look at and to see what the range of responses can be. But that doesn't mean that Canada and BC can just kind of wholesale take any of these examples and just activate. Like, we really need to do the work in our own communities, in our own province, to fit this into the narrative of who we are and why it's important to us as Canadians and why it's important to us as residents of British Columbia. So I get to geek out. I mean, the long story short, I get to geek out and dive into a really new field of research, where, you know, we have people in BC who are at the vanguard of this and really pushing to create a body of work that folks like me can access to understand the problem from that 50,000 foot view, but also make sense of and nest the personal experiences that we have and that we carry with us within kind of the bigger ecology. So what does it mean when I, as a woman of color, child of immigrants, doesn't have access to menstrual products? Well, that's going to look a lot different than an Indigenous woman, you know, the experience is different. The experience and the experience of getting by and I feel like I'm speaking slower than I'm thinking, and I'm not putting these together. So let me back up, slow down, and start again. So Arielle, as a woman of color, child of immigrants, has a very particular understanding of her period and how she culturally has to go about meeting that need. And it's going to be different than another woman or somebody else who menstruates, who has a different cultural understanding of how they're supposed to go about getting that need met. But ultimately, both I and anybody else that menstruates really is the patriarchy affects all of us. I was trying to find a less hot topic word than that, but the patriarchy affects us all and affects us all differently. And so without that 50,000 foot view, my experience just becomes a story that I can share with other people that menstruate, kind of as Neil indicated, in this private club, where we can kind of empathize and sympathize, but we don't actually get to the problem, which is how the patriarchy has reduced us to meeting our needs in these really not efficient, not feel good, not dignified ways, and then requires us to be silent about it. So as I slowed down, but then I got louder.
but it's bang on, right?
Yeah.
All unfortunately so painfully, heartbreakingly true.
And so we're better to take on that work if not in this post-secondary sphere. I'm going to do a tiny little plug. So if post-secondary education is as much about soul craft as it is about skills training and a development and adding to a body of knowledge, then, you know, this work is super intimate and not intimate, but integral to us developing as humans and developing as humans together. This work makes us better as people, Puntu. Sorry.
No, I love that. It humanizes us to know what happens with some of our bodies, you know, and ultimately how all of our bodies ended up in this world. Because without it, we wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation, right? The folks that I have online with me are from Period Promise. They're the team involved with a campaign through the United Way. And Neil, I'm interested because you're the he, him, his voice here with us. What is your interest in this issue? What does ending period poverty have to do with you?
It's a good question, right? I think I have to raise up the names of some really important community champions who have done a lot of really good work to teach me why this is important, right? So I think of my predecessor in my role at United Way. Her name is Nikki Hill. She's now a volunteer co-chair on the campaign, and I'm in constant communication with her about the work that needs to be done on this issue. And I think of our other very good friend, Suzanne Skidmore, who has been a longtime advocate and champion on this particular issue. They both have taught me a lot, to just put it simply. Not necessarily about like the mechanics of menstruation, but about why this issue matters and why it's important to really build to build the capacity for the movement and build the potential for making change possible, which is for all the good work that United Way is doing on this issue. I think what's really exciting to me is like we get to hang out with people like the BC Federation of Students and a whole bunch of other groups and individuals who are trying to make change happen, and just feed them the information, feed them the skills that they need to do it one level better, and start building the collaborative relationships across organizations and across individual activists so that we can increase the momentum or move bring the moment strengthen the momentum that's really developing here, particularly locally in BC. Like Arielle hinted at this, but like we are a regional lead not only in Canada but across North America on the real potential, not only for the change that's already taking place, but the change that could happen in the near future. There's nowhere that's doing this at the same rate as us, and it's not because of United Way's Period Promise campaign. I would love to say that we deserve all the credit, but we don't. It's because people are working with each other and people are collaborating and working together. That doesn't quite get to the personal level. It's worth pointing out, like, part of this came with my job. So I kind of, that's maybe a structural response, but it fits really deeply into my generalized understanding of what community needs to look like and needs to do. And it's about making spaces, making everything as accessible and as equitable for everybody as possible. And so that's a lifelong value that I've got. I'm a lifelong labor activist that comes from the labor movement and my work with the labor movement. And when an issue doesn't, what I've learned from the labor movement is that when an issue doesn't affect me personally, but it affects people in my community, I have to stand up in solidarity. And that's really what I think I'm doing. And I happen to be the staff lead, and I happen to be doing a lot of work on this, but it's really out of solidarity and a desire to build the solutions with people who have the lived experience of limited access to menstrual products. So there's kind of an answer. I'm never quite sure how to answer this question because it came with the job, but I've had really good mentors who have taught me so much about this, and it integrate so closely with my like lifelong values as a human that like I might not menstruate, but I've got people in my community who do, and I can offer some support by working with them to build systems that make the world more supportive for them.
Hallelujah there. We've talked a little bit about how Period Promise is a campaign through the United Way. And I guess I'm interested in how did it go from, you know, being outside of the United Way to being inside the United Way and you know, become and grow into the thing that it has become, and you know what those tentacles are reaching out now.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm gonna tell you the first half of the story, I think, and then I'm gonna actually maybe ask Melissa to jump in on the second half, because Melissa's been involved through the connection of the BCFS for what, 3 years now. It seems like we've been in touch on this for quite a while, and she can speak about perhaps that like as the we've matured our work at United Way, what it's really meant for our development of partnerships on this work. But about 6 years ago, United Way Canada, the way United Way is structured, I don't want to go into the details because it's really boring for anybody who's not part of the United Way movement, but basically United Way is structured as a bunch of independent federated charities that have presence across the country, hyper-localized presence, but also that have this federated structure towards the United Way Canada. And about 6 years ago, United Way Canada said, you know, we're hearing about this and we want to do some work on this. Do you think your individual United Ways might be interested? That's when my predecessor, Nikki Hill, jumped up and said, this is something that we can do something about. We can do some really, we can have a major impact, and we can run a quick collection and distribute that product that we collect to community organizations, because we have all the networks. We're one of those superpower organizations in a way that we know the people and we know how to do things. And we can make this happen relatively easily. So in that first year, we collected about 30,000 menstrual products. I wasn't at the United Way at the time, but I saw these photos of this mountain of menstrual products in our lobby that had been collected. And people were like, we saved the world. Like 30,000 menstrual products is a lot of menstrual products, until they started taking them out to community organizations. And they found that those 30,000 menstrual products could only really support two or three community organizations for like 4 or 5 months at most. So over the past several years, we've been growing the campaign. This year, we're hoping to collect about 500,000 menstrual products to support hundreds of community organizations in our region. But recognizing again that this is still a very charitable model, classic charity act. And the benefit of what United Way does is the relationships that we develop with a lot of our partners keeps us honest in a way that is really valuable. And it pushes us in a way that perhaps individually we wouldn't go in without our external stakeholders saying, hey, this is what we want you to do. And my primary job at United Way, Period Promise falls into it, but my primary job is to develop and navigate the relationship between United Way and the local labor movement. And so we worked very closely with the labor movement on developing the collection campaign. And I remember sitting in a, being invited to a union's women's committee meeting to talk about the collection campaign. And it was a really great conversation. They were super excited. They were keen to support. They ran a collection. They made a donation to the campaign. It was fantastic. And then the president of the union, I remember sitting in a rotating chair right next to her in the boardroom while I was doing this quick presentation outlining what the campaign was. And right afterward, well, not right afterwards, in a very friendly way, this was the BCGEU. The president is Stephanie Smith. She's an exceptional leader in the community. But she slowly rotates her rotating chair towards me and says, so what are you doing on policy? So that you can see this as an issue within a systems framework. Now, at that point, we hadn't done anything related to developing a policy framework, developing a policy concept on this. Nikki, my predecessor, she was having conversations with politicians, starting to get a bit of a sense, like, what is the potential here for, on a policy side of things, on a regulation side of things. But we hadn't been building out any public facing campaigning on this. But that was kind of a turning point for us, because the moment we started hearing it from an external stakeholder, like, this is what we want you to do, it gave us permission to start switching from that classical charitable model of collecting and distributing products, which is still super important. I don't want to ever discount the importance of that. There are people out in our community who are in need of support, and the only way that a lot of community organizations are able to provide them support is through collection of donations. That gave us permission to go and add on this additional layer of government relations as a strategy and a layer of policy development and policy framework. And that's when we started building up this bundle of relationships to get the word out there into a whole bunch of industries that, hey, access to menstrual products is a problem at your workspace, access to menstrual products is a problem at your post-secondary institution. Let's start finding solutions. And that's where I want to bring Melissa in, because that's the fun part of the story, is like, this is where the work that we've done to kind of support and develop other organizations is starting to really take off.
Yeah, I can jump right into that. I actually remember the day that Neil came to my board meeting at the Douglas Student Union to talk about Period Promise. And the initial conversation was around, let's donate this amount of money to United Waste to provide period products. But as the conversation went on, we realized that, yes, we have to donate this money for that. We have to provide period products in our building too for our students. But what about the institution? We also have to make sure that the bathrooms there do have these products available. So I think when it comes to like that engagement, it's like, it's a really interesting thing where it's kind of like, tag, now you're it. So now from the student union perspective, like at first we started providing this product, these products and creating awareness around the period promise. But now we're in a position that we're also talking to institutions and getting them to have the the test round of like, okay, how would this look on our campus, and to provide these in institutions too. So I think it's really it's really engaging everyone in the conversation, because yes, providing peer products in one place is important, but we need to make sure that it's everywhere. Like if you're working at a restaurant, they should have these products available just in case if someone menstruates, gets their period, they can use these products. So I think it's really about engaging in the conversation of, okay, why should we provide this? People that are in our space, how do they benefit from this? And I just want to add on really quick, because I know one thing that people are really worried about when engaging around this conversation is, people are going to just grab a bunch of peer products and hoard them. But if they are hoarding peer products, I think that's why we need to make them available. People, if they're available in spaces, people wouldn't be hoarding them. The reason why they would grab maybe one or two more is literally because these are not available. So the more we make these products available, people are going to benefit from it. And it's not going to, the problem of hoarding is not going to be a problem, because it's going to be available to everyone.
I love that you addressed the issue of hoarding and that it's representative of need, but also the idea of sort of tag you're it, right? Like passing the torch and calling upon other institutions, government bodies, community agencies to also get on board with this. Just in the last few minutes that we have, 6 minutes or so, how can people get involved, and how can people find out more information about period poverty and the period promise.
I'll do a quick plug for the United Way stuff, and then I'm going to toss it over to the BCFS, because this is, this being SFU as a pub, as a space, I think that the their role as kind of these localized knowledge keepers on post-secondary institutions is really important. But Period Promise, United Way's Period Promise campaign, we've got a website. It's periodpromise.ca. It's got a ton of information on there about the what the campaign does, what it's done historically, what its accomplishments have been, what kind of research we've done and developed and released, the our policy framework that any organization can sign on to. You can see the full list of about 35 organizations that have signed on to the onto the policy framework. We're always looking for more. So if you hear this and you're in a position to sign on, please give us a call and we'll get your name onto that list, because we're really excited about it. Increasing that representation. So periodpromise.ca, best place to go and find some quick information, best place to gather information. The other option is to contact us at United Way. If you've got particular questions, if you're curious about what kind of initiatives we're developing now and where we want to go in 3 to 5 years, those are the kinds of conversations that I want to have with anybody who's interested in getting involved in this work, because that's really the next step is planning for now, but also planning for 5 years from now. And we can't do that alone. We can only do that in collaboration with other people. So periodpromise@uwlm.ca is our email address, and we will help you out. But yeah, BCFS.
Yeah, for sure. I'll add like a few things here. One thing is doing the internal work, talking to people around you, engaging with them, but also engaging with your student leaders on campus, talking to them about how this is important for you. I think a lot of times when I hear student stories, I think that's when it really like touches my heart, just hearing like their experiences and what they have gone through. So engaging with your student leaders and talking about this. And for the personal internal work, I think it's valuing your experience. Because a lot of times you grab what you've gone through and you're like, oh yeah, but that's just what I experienced. When you look at one person experience and the amount of people that have also had the same thing, you should value that. You should really value that and voice how this would affect you and how having menstrual products will really benefit you. And the next thing, I'll send you folks to our website. So it's wearebcstudents.ca. Engage with our pre-promise campaign on our website. We actually have a petition there, but yeah, I don't know if Ariel wants to add anything else.
No, you both covered it really, really well. Just to, you know, echo and highlight again that personal piece, how we talk about menstruation, how we talk about periods in our private lives has the ability to create ripple effects to change our society. So start talking about it.
Well, this has been a good opportunity, hopefully, for you listening to have a conversation with folks in your household, in your workplace, and inform yourself about, you know, what the period promise means and how you fit into one of those three levels of period poverty. Hopefully you don't, but chances are you might. I want to thank my guests on today's show, Neil Adolph from the United Way and Ariel Reed and Melissa Chirino from the BCFS. Yeah, thank you so much. I will post the links to contact information and you know, links to the website so that listeners can find and navigate their way to you. Listeners, don't go away. Democracy Now! Is coming up right after this show. And thank you all so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.